Welcome to the EDUCAUSE podcast. This podcast features a session from the EDUCAUSE 2008 annual conference. You can find more podcasts like this by visiting www.educause.edu/podcasts or subscribe to our iTunes feed by searching for EDUCAUSE. This podcast is sponsored by Real Networks and features a session from the EDUCAUSE 2008 annual conference. Participants include Barbara T. Friedman, Manager of Educational Outreach and Faculty Support Services at Cornell University, and Claire C. Vandenblink, Manager of Faculty Support Services at Cornell University. The session is entitled, The Future of Instructional Computing Labs.
Welcome. My name is Claire Vandenblink. I'm from Cornell University, and we're here today to present to you the process that we've been through in the past year. And I just wanted to start that. That's a process that started, ironically enough for me, at EDUCAUSE a year ago. I went to the last 8 a.m. session and listened to a presentation from the University of Rochester about their space redesign. At the time, I was also thinking about my new responsibilities during a reorg we've been going through in the past year about our instructional labs and the future of instructional lab and how they fit into the overall mission of how we're supporting academics at Cornell. The unit that I manage supports all of the academic technologies, including our course management systems and our instructional lab systems. So we're really here today to talk about the process that we went through, because as we were reassessing how we were using the labs to support instruction, we went through an interesting process and several data collection activities to come up with both a short-term and a long-term plan. So what we've been participating in the past year are several research projects. One research project we had came out of a faculty project we worked at where we implemented a smart classroom that we squeezed into an existing space. It was a project that didn't have a lot of resources but had tremendous instructional challenges. And what we learned from that project really informed our thinking and how we wanted to apply that to the future of what we were doing with our instructional and general purpose computer labs. Starting last December through March, and we had a 3 to 4 month time period where we conducted two parallel research projects to collect the data. And that's really what we're going to be talking about today. We're going to go into the two research projects that we collected the data about our instructional labs in the present and our instructional labs in the future. And we'll go into those in a little bit more detail. But I wanted to put it into context, because as I was thinking about what we're going to talk today, I was thinking about my own experience with instructional labs and thinking about how the paradigm for that hasn't really changed. I go back to the language learning lab I encountered when I was in high school. You know, everything sort of sectioned off and separate and in nice, neat rows. And, you know, fast forward many years later, our instructional labs and classrooms still are clinging to that particular paradigm. And what we're looking at is not necessarily breaking what's working, but evaluating what's not working and how we can move forward into the future. So that's what we're going to talk about today and look at the journey that we had to get here. And then we'll end with maybe some practices that you can take home to your own institutions that may apply to you with our methodology and our journey that we had to get from point A to point B. Our rationale for what we're doing is we needed to have a long-term vision for what we're doing for the labs. Ironically enough, that vision included efficient use of resources. Fast forward to this fall, and that work that we did is now really becoming valuable to us as we do have to scrutinize our resources in higher education. But we didn't start with that in mind. We really were looking towards the future and how can we have some short-term gains in the changes in how we're approaching supporting our labs and working with them in the future. So we're really looking at it. Originally, our first charge was looking at rethinking our physical spaces of the computing labs that we have. And to put it into context, we support six instructional labs with the unit that we support, the central IT unit, and another series of general purpose labs scattered throughout the campus. I don't know if any of you have been to Ithaca, but we're a pretty large geographic area, and there's some great distances between one lab or the other, so the location of where they are on campus is very important, and that also played into how we collected the data. I do want to have a caveat saying there are a lot of instructional labs on campus that are supported by the libraries and other colleges on campus, so we're not the only game in town, and we do partner with those. So the data that we collected is from our audience that come to our labs, and we were able to translate that to more general use of how the computer labs were used. I'd like to introduce my colleague Barbara Friedman, and she manages the lab group on campus, and she's going to talk about our first research project that we did, and that is collecting data about the present use of the labs at Cornell.
I'm not actually the person who did this survey. I started working with the labs in February. But the person who did the survey and collected the results is named Kim Nicholson, and she did an outstanding job. We will give a link to you later where you can actually see the survey online if you would like to try it out yourself. But the survey had to do with how CIT labs are currently being used. We wanted to know how students were using them so that we would make sure that whatever we planned for the future would include enough for those students to be able to use so that they would be happy with the services that they're receiving. We did this survey over the winter through the computer labs. There were 538 responses. The survey, it wasn't just a survey. We also had interviews with the lab staff. We have part-timers that work in the lab. We have four regular part-time staff plus 50 students that work in the labs. We did observations on three representative labs. They were three of the heavily used labs, and so we were able to get the most information from those. And we also took photographs of lab activity. This is the desktop that we used in order to entice students to actually take this survey. We use Active Desktop and our PC labs, and so we had to bribe the students. We offered them, if they entered their NetID when they were taking the survey, they were entered to win one of five $20 gift certificates for a local coffee shop. And so I'm pretty sure that's what got most of them in there. As far as the observations went, we had to make sure that no assumptions were made. For example, one student was found reading Shakespeare on a CIT lab computer. Turns out they were reading it for pleasure, while some other people who were playing games were doing it for a class. And so we couldn't just assume by looking at whatever they were doing, whether it was for a class or whether it was just for fun. So the survey results from the students themselves were actually much more representative of their activity. So what were the students doing in the labs? 54% of the students reported using the labs for academic tasks three or more times per week. And we actually have a chart in a slide next one so that you can kind of see how the time frames were broken out. 12% of the students surveyed used the labs to hang out socially with their friends. Yeah, especially engineers, it's a fun time for them to be in the labs, especially late at night. They used it to send and receive communications, whether through email or through chat, that kind of thing. And many of them use the internet while they're in there. 62% of them use it for course-related internet use and 47% for non-course-related. 77% of the students told us that they were multitasking when they were lab. They would have 2 to 6 screens up, so they might be looking at Blackboard to get an assignment and then using the library portal to do their research while they were emailing or chatting with their friends. They would have multiple windows open at the same time. We asked them how often they used the lab for different types of activities. Mostly the students would come in there on a non-regular basis, maybe 3 to 4 times a week. Sometimes it was only for social activity. Other times it was only for academic tasks. But you see that this almost never came in there for pure social activities, and almost daily came in there. I really screwed that one up. 20% up to 20% came in almost daily to do academic work. One of the things that many students do is printing. A lot of them will come in right before a class and print something off because they have to hand it in. And in fact, we had this request recently from a student for us to tell them which labs where we had only recycled paper, because they had a professor that would only accept papers that were printed on recycled paper. And that's a little scary for us to think that that's a requirement, although we are doing it most of the labs just to be green. But one of the things that we do at Cornell is we have a program called NetPrint, where students can prepay for printing. It gets charged to their bursar bill, and we can also track how much they're using the printing service. And so we're able to take a look at when they are printing, and we see huge surges in printing right at the end of the semester, and it's predictable. This particular chart is actually showing 2 years of activity. The red is fiscal year 07, the green is fiscal year 08, and you see that it's almost exactly the same between the 2 years. And so that helps us actually plan for paper and printing supplies for the next year. This particular chart is just showing one of our labs with 53,000 print jobs over the fiscal year, and multiply that by about 10 labs where we offer heavy-duty printing. 92% of our students have computers, and so we're interested in knowing why it is that they choose to come to the labs when they already have their own computer. And most of them do it because the computers are available on campus. In some cases, the computers in the labs are available exactly when they need them. Sometimes they do it for social reasons. Sometimes they do it for the software. In some cases, it's because it's associated with the library and they need to do their research there. But 79% of the responses said that they use the labs because they're convenient. So the follow-up question is, what are they convenient to? They're convenient to my classes, they're convenient to the library, they're convenient to my favorite coffee shop. None of the responses were the same. They were all over the map, and it's just convenience was the real factor there. It's because the labs were right where they needed them. So the summary of the survey is basically that the labs are convenient, they have the software that students need, they're used for study and research, they're used for collaboration, and they're really part of the day for many of these students. And so these are important results for us to take into our planning for the future, because we want to make sure that we will still offer these types of things.
And one of the things that came in mind from the survey, and just to keep in mind, we did the survey in a three-week period, so we were pleased at the level of participation we had, but it was a snapshot. But it came out that the people were doing contradictory things in the lab. I want a quiet study space. I want to collaborate with my study group. I want to work alone. I want to work in parallel. And then all over the map with all of those. And that was one of the things that sort of informed our thinking, of that you have these very contradictory activities that the students are reporting. A lot of what they reported were things that we expected, you know, the multitasking, all of that type of thing. They were there just to print papers, they were just there to type papers and check email, was something that we hadn't quite expected as heavy a use of our labs. But part of this, keep that in mind in the context of our campus. As I said, we're a very geographically large campus. A certain part of the campus is very steep, our slope. So convenience is a big issue on our campus, because the dorms or apartments that students live in tend not to be really close to where the classroom buildings are. A lot of times they're getting on buses or walking half a mile to a mile or more to get to their thing. So that's something that's very unique to our campus. So we want to keep that in mind, because the data is interesting, and I'm sure you'll find a lot of it translates to your colleges as well, because this generation of students sort of tends to have similar behavior. But some of it was very specific to where our labs are located on campus, and what they're convenient to and how they're being used. So I do want to keep that in mind, that part is somewhat specific to how we have things set up here at Cornell. In parallel to our present activity about, you know, how are the labs being used, we had a second activity. I do want to make a comment about sort of the present use of it, because it actually was prompted by a question, is as we were presenting our plan of how we were going to gather the data, to prepare for the future, and to do that is in December I gave a presentation to our Faculty Advisory Board on technology, and that was where the question came up, because there was this belief that students are kind of goofing off. If they're searching the internet, they're not really working seriously. So are they really using this lab space for serious academic work? And the interesting thing was, is our data said, yes, they are very much so. Did we find games and they're downloading video, watching TV through the games? Yes, of course we did. We found a lot of that, but overwhelmingly, they were there to do work. Our students have pretty intense schedule, and the data really back that up. And so the use of it as sort of for a frivolous activity, we didn't really find. So they're being used continually, and they're really being used for serious needs on campus. So now to talk about the future. We engaged another colleague of ours who's a specialist in facilitating focus groups. Her name is Teresa Craighead. And the report that she wrote at the end of doing the focus groups is also going to be available on the website. The long report is about 80 pages long if you want some really long reading. But what she did is she conducted several focus groups at our request. We gave her the framework, and she worked them out. And the constituencies that we invited to participate were information technology staff from across campus, lab support staff, faculty and instructors from a variety of disciplines, different levels of administrators, librarians, sort of, and students. The whole gamut of people that would have an opinion about how labs are being used, people who use the labs, from both a teaching point of view or from a student point of view. So that was an interesting mix of constituencies that we had over campus. We did the focus groups from the December to February timeframe. So once we got to March, we had both reports written, and we were able to have a really rich set of data. One of the interesting things that happened is as we were going through this process, and I really do want to stress, it's very much a process that we're going through. In late December, early January, Teresa gave me a little snippet of the data she was collecting from the focus group. By early January, she had done two focus groups, and you know, we discussed it mostly from a process point of view. You know, are we getting the data we need? You know, should we tweak anything? But she was able to share some early findings with me, and ironically enough, we were just finishing up a brand new instructional computer lab that we were putting into one of the libraries at Cornell. The Mann Library at Cornell had just finished an extensive renovation in this lovely new space, and we're really in the middle of installing and setting up the lab. And one of the early findings, and I'll talk about this in a little bit more detail, was the thing that was coming up loud and clear from every constituency is the need for a collaborative space. And that came out through everything that we were doing. We observed students collaborating in spaces that weren't really built for it. So this is sort of like a no-brainer. But the short-term thing was, it was actually the week we had to order the furniture for the lab. And, you know, we were going back and forth with the Mann Library people, you know, what should we get, what'll fit the space, you know, all of the normal things that you go through, you know, ADA, how wide do they have to be, fire regulations, you know, sort of all the nuts and bolts things that you go to. So I had this little tiny snippet of information, and I was sort of like, we haven't made a decision, let's look at it. And so I tasked the person who was in charge of ordering the furniture for the space. I said, okay, give me some research. You know, what else is out there? Does it fit our budget? That was the biggie. Because, you know, the perception of doing a small change might be more expensive. Ironically enough, the collaborative tables that we want were definitely in our budget ballpark. And so instead of having, you know, fixed instructional spaces, we flipped out the tables. Now, that sounds like a really small thing, just to change the tables. But what it did is it gave us a sandbox to play with in this space. We can move the tables around, they're on wheels, we can have circles, squares, octagons, rows for teaching, really whatever you wanted to do. So in the spring semester, we've experimented a little. I know Barbara's group had sort of moved things around for different classes and activities, and it gave us a taste of, is this worth doing? Will people be accepting of it? And we found some interesting things where it upset a few people that it didn't look like a lab. They were in circles, not rows, which was kind of funny, and they actually put them back. And those were some of our own lab operators. And we quickly told them that, no, this was the intention, and to experiment for that. And then we got into logistical issues about wires and cords and where they go and all of that real hardware, physical stuff you have to worry about in a space. But it gave us a place to start, because the buzzword is collaboration, and what does that mean? And that was really what we were starting to experiment with. So the early part of the focus groups gave us that little tiny snippet of information. We were able to quickly change, the time it came up, and really make a very, very small change. And that started to inform our larger plan. So I'm going to just walk through some of the findings that we had in the focus groups. The report summarizes about a dozen themes, and today for time purposes, I'm only going to focus on the top three. There's a lot of detailed themes that are, some are very Cornell specific, some also address workflow and staffing issues as well, but I'm really focusing on the ones that I think would hopefully resonate with most of you in the room. So the first thing is really, the interesting thing that came up was funny, because we were looking at, remember, our original intent was reviewing the physical space and how it was being used. One of the first things that came out loud and clear, and the reason why this is the number one theme, is because it was the most talked about, the one that was labeled as most important within our focus group participants. And that is remote access to software. Now, ironically enough, this is not a particularly new idea for us. We had looked at this about 5 years ago, and at that time, with what we wanted to do, it was just cost prohibitive. We didn't have the resources that we wanted to do. And at that time, we also didn't have a clear sense of whether this was a direction that the campus wanted to go in. This focus group was very clear that, yes, this is a direction that we want to go in and to have that access to that. And this is pretty meaningful for us because, again, think all the labs were in very specific places on campus. For some of the students in certain classes, this may be the only place that they can get a particular piece of software. So you have the computer science or engineering students that need a copy of MATLAB software. They have to go to a physical lab to be able to use it because it's too expensive for them to purchase it to use in their dorm rooms. And there's many examples of that type of software. So this is one of the new directions that it wasn't a hardware or a physical space, but rather a virtual space. So we're really looking at rethinking how we're doing the physical spaces and then how we can make room for the virtual space. So it's that virtual environment for, you know, storage of data, storage of software, and how to serve that up. And as we've been conducting additional focus groups this fall with some faculty in the Arts and Sciences College, this actually has come up in a very different venue of the need to share software. They actually brought it up themselves. So this is something that's definitely an emerging need, and we're actively looking at engaging in a pilot of this to make sure that it will work and to reduce what we're doing in the labs. The next one is, no surprise, flexible learning spaces. That also came out loud and clear. It came out from the students wanting to have collaborative space for their projects, you know, those noisy group spaces, as well as all of the constituencies that were talking about the collaborative spaces, from teachers that wanted to be able to have small group breakout sessions to the IT staff that recognized the need for it. But right now, the way many of classrooms and labs are configured, it's very limiting just to move things around or to adjust that to create that flexible space. And it's flexible not just for seating arrangements, but for projection. High quality visualization is very important to, like, our humanities faculty, art history, art. I mean, it's critical that they're able to have a space where they can rapidly show images, manipulate them, and change them within the teaching space. So projection, visualization is important. Switching between mediums, so the whole control podiums and back and forth, also goes into the flexibility. Now, ironically enough, none of this is really new or cutting edge. The part that is what we're seeing is the blurring of the boundaries now between a traditional classroom teaching space and what is a traditional, quote, instructional lab space, finding out. And it's really hard now in the planning to say, is this a classroom or is this a lab? So instead, we're changing our paradigm a little bit to say it's a learning space. The labs tend to be a little bit more technology rich in the learning space, and really to rethink of it as a learning space, not just a place to sit down at a computer and use a piece of software. So that was another thing that came out about that, and really the flexibility of saying, what do students want to do in the space if it's 3 o'clock in the morning, they're working on a project, versus what a faculty wants to do at 3 p.m. in the afternoon, and they're teaching a class, and they want the students to do some group work. So that was the other theme that we were handed. Ironically, the converse was true as well, is an equal need was for quiet spaces, spaces that were for a single quiet zone. As we found in the student survey, there was that need. I want to work quietly. In many cases, their dorm room is noisy. Their apartment is noisy. They want to have that quiet workspace. So how do you build a space that meets both needs? And that's really the challenge. One of the things that we're going to be using as a guiding point is one of the things that emerged from our lab operators' observations and comments about how their labs are being used and from the students and other providers, and that is the culture of a lab. What we found on campus is the location of a lab has its own unique culture about who tends to use it and for what purpose. So, for example, we have a lab in a building in the engineering quad that's open 24 hours a day. It's the highly collaborative space. It's noisy. It's all night long. They bring in the bootleg pizza at 3 o'clock in the morning, which is a nice challenge in cleaning up in the morning once the students leave. But it's that space. Then we have other spaces that are sort of in the library that are more quiet, contemplative spaces. Ironically enough, both spaces were put together with the same framework, the same design, but it was how the students are using the spaces that made the culture unique. So that's one thing that we don't want to lose, and that we're really looking at the labs and saying, okay, who's using it and why? And we'll probably end up having some labs will be the flexible, noisier spaces, and the other ones that are more quiet work zones. And this informed our short-term plans for what we're identifying as an optimum for a collaborative space. So again, keeping the culture of how the students are using the space is really important to us, and because we don't want to lose the convenience in how they're working with the labs. The third critical theme is something that, again, it's not a no-brainer, but that's ubiquitous computing. And this is something that transcends basically our responsibility but goes across campus. The students want computers everywhere, wireless everywhere, everything everywhere. They don't understand why you can't have everything all at once. So what we're looking at as the part that we can take away from this is in the labs is what do the students want? And comments that came out is they have computers. They don't carry them with them, but they want to be really, really close to computers, whether it's in their hand or that convenient location next to the coffee shop that they want to stop at. So the part that we can take away from this is our locations on campus are still convenient. We don't want to lose that, but how do we then accommodate the need for other kind of devices in our labs? That's one of the things that we're looking at. Now, all of this balances out our resourcing for the labs. Is right now we support hundreds of computers all across campus. As you can imagine, it's very time intensive from the software maintenance to the hardware maintenance to the staff. I know in the past couple of days our amazing lab staff went nuts putting a Windows security patch on all the computers and making sure everything was clean and that, and it was a very labor-intensive process that we've gone through in the last couple of days. So as we're looking at our resources and saying, okay, what is it we can do for the campus? Our resources aren't growing, but how do we meet these needs and look at moving the labs forward into a new paradigm? And again, this is part of the process that we're going through and to thinking about. And that's really the next step. So these two large-scale data collection activities that we went through really informed the process that we're now going through. So this is our challenge that we're looking at. Same resource pool, but now we're looking at balancing things out a little bit differently. Is we intend to keep the labs, some hardware, some software, obviously we have our staff, but we're going to look at repurposing them. And one of our goals is to start to look at how can we take the current resources that we have and take them and move them into the one goal of having this virtual computer lab. And that's our long-term goal for this year, is to come up with a plan of action and how we're doing that. And part of it is what we're doing in the short-term activities. But that was the key for what we're coming up. And I'm willing to bet this probably resonates with many of you in the audience, is that your resources aren't going to change. And so how can we balance these new needs that all of us have in front of us with the same resources that we have at the moment? And as I said, this is very specific to Cornell. So there's our nice beauty shot of, unfortunately, all the leaves are now off the trees in Ithaca. But that's one thing I want to keep you in mind, that this is our findings and our plan of attack are very specific to our campus and our layout. And just to give you an idea of space, that is the arts quad, and that's only about, quarter or less of the geography of the campus that we're dealing with. So it is quite a large layout. It's great for exercise and walking, by the way, for that. But that's the thing we want to keep on in mind as we're working on that. It's very specific to our campus. But the process that we're going through and the methodology, I think, would resonate as you're going through a similar thought process in your labs. So our short-term activity is, as I mentioned before, we had that brief opportunity in January to just switch out the tables and use that as an experiment to see if it's worth doing. Once we did that and we had all of the data, we started to look at the labs and the usage and saying, okay, what can we do in this space? What is an optimum to convert into a collaborative space? And we had a nice increase in our resources last spring that was sort of serendipitous, and it intersected when we were coming up with our recommendations. So of our six labs, we've identified several to turn them into collaborative spaces. And the way that we're shifting resources, in many of them, we're cutting the number of computers we're having by 30% to 50%. And that will free it up so that now students can bring in their laptops or other mobile devices, be able to connect into the resources in the room, and switch out some simple things to make it more of a collaborative space. So those labs that we've already identified that students are collaborating in now, I don't know how well you can see it, but that picture in the bottom corner, that's in one of our labs before we made the changes. That's in the ones highly collaborative. And if you notice, all the tables are in one row. And in all of the pictures that we took in the lab observations, is the students are doing what they can to make it collaborative. The furniture and layout is not set up for collaboration. It's really set up for very formal instruction. But the part that we observed is it doesn't matter. I mean, they had papers all over the place, backpacks all over the place, and probably 3 to 4 students huddled around a computer. It wasn't optimum for what they were working on, but they made it work. So now our job is to switch the resources around a little bit to make it a little bit easier for them to collaborate in these existing spaces. We also are putting in different teaching enhancements. Many of the visualization, projection, requirements the faculty are looking at, and podiums that are more like one-stop shopping. In many of our classrooms on campus, the work has been done to upgrade the classrooms and give you the smart podiums and the integration with all of the devices. In our labs, we hadn't really gone that route before because, again, the focus was much more on using the computer for teaching. So now we're combining all of those. So again, there's that blurring of the boundaries for that. So this is actually, both of these are projects that we're actively engaged in. We started last April or May in the design and purchasing of all of these things. So that is something that is our short-term goal. And I really see this as our instructional lab is getting caught up to the present day. And that is being responsive to what Cornell faculty and students need and expect in the labs, and to give it to them and roll it out in the next couple of months. So that's the short-term view. Another short-term view that we have, this is a drawing that we have. I'm really lucky to have somebody on staff who is in her spare time getting her Master's of Architecture degree at Cornell. And she assisted us in working with our furniture designer to really transform another lab, which is our faculty lab. We have an academic technology center on campus. We've had one for probably over 15 years. The location for the faculty, however, is very inconvenient. It's in one part of the campus that only serves a portion of them. So we're building this in another part of the campus in an existing space. So we're having to retrofit a room that is sort of dungeon-like to begin with. So it's a bit of a challenge to squeeze that in there. But we're using all of the findings that we're doing to build it. And what you can see is all of the tables come apart. You can move them around. The things that look like large screens, everything's on wheels. The chairs that look like easy chairs are laptop stations. They have little things that come up that you can put the laptops on. We'll have power in the floor, so anything can be moved around anywhere in the room. And then we'll have smart boards and some that you can also move around in the space for that. So the idea is this is where faculty come in. We give them assistance, consultation. We have digitization stations so they can help prepare their materials. So it's functionally, it's what we've been doing all along and are already doing. The difference is building in the flexibility that we've been requested, the collaborative workspace, and the convenient location. It's also near a coffee shop, which is also very important to our faculty as well. Our long-term planning is actually a little bit more complicated because the one goal that we have is building the virtual resource is very resource intensive. And during the transitional period, we still need to support the physical hardware, software equipment that are in the labs. At the same time, spinning up the new resources that we want to do is bringing up the servers to support the virtual software and the applications that we want to support. And it's a challenge for us right now because, again, our resources aren't growing. They're static for that. And it's really that long-term challenge. And we're looking at partnering with other units on campus to bring this up to really meet this goal because that is, I think, is going to buy us a lot towards the future. Because once we have this environment in place, you know, having the staff having to spend a couple of days doing security patches disappears. The ability to support hundreds of applications that the students don't have to, in, you know, 20 below weather in February with the wind blowing, they don't have to leave their dorm rooms to get that special software that they need to finish their class assignments. And that's the direction that we're going in, and that is one of the key things that we're being informed. So the other long-term thing is the physical labs. We're not going to abandon that because there was still a very, very strong need for that, but instead rather pay attention to the research that's out there, not just ours, but all of the research that we've been looking at to say what really becomes a meaningful space. The picture that we have is one of our collaborative labs in the library that we built in conjunction with the lab a couple of years ago. So we have data and how that's being used for a collaborative space that we can use to inform the future. So we're not abandoning the physical space yet. And then, as I said before, the virtual labs that we're going to be doing for the software. So the reports that we're talking about that will be posted on the website, the link will be on the EDUCAUSE pretty soon, are going to take the data from the three research projects that we did and in conjunction with our strategic plan to saying, you know, we're planning for no increase in resources, how are we going to map to the future? So our future is probably like yours, somewhat uncertain these days, and we're still engaged in that long-term process. But as we're thinking about what we could share with you today, I think our methods and our thought process is probably more valuable. I think a lot of the data that we have, you know, you can sort of go, yeah, that sounds about right. You know, we probably have similar experiences at our university. We've also seen that in the literature reviews that we've done, similar stuff. So I know that it's not 100% unique what we're talking about, but rather it's the activity that we've gone through and how does that transfer to your institution and sort of the kind of approaches that we found and how they've worked. And it's really a data collection process. Now, one of the things I do want to point out is in the unit that I run, we've done a lot of evaluation activities in the past couple of years, and I'm lucky that I have expertise on my staff and some other resources within our IT organization to do that. But the time that it took to do this actually wasn't as much as you would think it was. The woman who does the focus groups is very experienced and well-trained, and so she can do them very efficiently. Our surveys were also done the same way, our other observations and other qualitative methods. So one of the things that we always look at with our methods is, you know, what's the optimum data that you want to collect balanced with the reality of what can you logistically do in the time frame that you're doing. So we did all of these activities in a 3 to 4 month period, and part of it is because we really zeroed in on what is the question that we want to have answered and what is the data that we need for our future planning here at Cornell. So that's really, I think, the lesson learned is sort of like evaluation 101, is going back and saying, what are your needs on your campus and how does that look at that? The part that was a bit of a surprise to us is a deeper understanding of the culture of how students use these spaces that are unique to Cornell, and some of it are also universally available about this existing generation of learners. So that was the lesson that we wanted to talk about. And as I said, we'll post these links about that. But just to summarize, is saying this is a process that we went through. We have a lot of rich data. Both of our reports are quite lengthy, and we've really just glossed over a lot of the detailed findings. But we use that to inform the future, both the short term and the long term. And I think one of the things to think about is, particularly, you know, nowadays, as I was thinking about this, preparing this, is when we thought about this presentation 8 or 9 months ago, we were in a very different place in the world than we are now. But this really informed us for the future. So even if we have a plan that we may not be able to implement this year, we have a plan that we're going to chip away at and say, okay, what can we do in the short term? What are the small gains that we can do and use our research to be able to figure out what that is? So I'm going to stop, and if anybody has any questions or comments you'd like to share. Yes? I can't hear you. What? Yes, he's asking if there are 24/7 facilities, and most of them are. And they're not staffed through the night. They're usually staffed till about 11 p.m. or midnight. Okay. Yes? Yes, he asked if our data includes a profile of our students. We collected data about the gender, year, majors, that type of thing. So that's we can look at that to cross-tab their general perceptions about their use. Okay. Yes? The question is about for the labs that are available 24/7, how do we track equipment? That's an interesting question. We have things locked down as much as we can lock them down with cables. We do use security cameras in the labs. Many of them, the doors are card-coded that you have to have a valid Cornell ID card to swipe to get into the room. But like any lab facility, that's a continual challenge. I mean, every once in a while, we have issues we have to deal with, just like anybody else would. Okay. Questions? No? Yes?
Are you providing any remote computing spaces such as districts or cloud computing
services, or do we get to get them? Yes, actually, he asked if we're providing any remote resources such as Citrix or anything that, saying that that's our next step. We haven't implemented that, and we're actually actively engaged in planning that and trying to identify the resources for that.
That brings on its own set of challenges, too.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, and we do have pockets of people at Cornell that are doing it a smaller thing, and that's sort of where we can leverage their experience and to look at what does a large-scale implementation look like. We've already done some preliminary analysis of some of the heavy graphic design CAD programs that are used probably won't work in that environment. But that's one of the things of how much can we put in that environment to optimize it. Believe it or not, the number one software that students used was Microsoft Office. You know, Cornell has a site license, so that can easily go in that environment. But some of the heavy-duty, you know, video editing software, things like that, we really have to look at another way of doing that. Yes, in the back. Yep. Yes. Yes, why don't the students use laptops? They don't want to carry them around. Batteries, security, what do you do when you go to lunch or use the restroom? I mean, it's all the typical reasons for that. And so that's why looking at some of the new spaces, having places where the students can plug them in. The portable tables that we're looking at have places not just to put a laptop, but to plug them in. And just to give you another data point, at Cornell in the past couple of years, the incoming freshmen, 92% of incoming freshmen have laptops. You don't see them carrying them around on campus. And that's an interesting point. It's like, you know, why don't they? I know Barbara has her nice little baby laptop she brought with her. My back is hurting from carrying my Big Mac laptop around for the past 2 days. And I can feel for the students because they have other priorities in what they're carrying around.
Yep.
Yes, I mean, he's asking about looking at power usage and different ways that we can configure the software. Actually, ironically, a second thing that we're looking at, which we didn't include in the presentation, is the use of thin clients. Cornell is very much into sustainability, which is why we don't have handouts for you, by the way. Less paper, but that is one of the things we're looking at, both on a power consumption basis, but also on a cost basis as well, and the staff maintenance issue. So as we're looking in the next year or two, as our computers age out and we naturally place them, thin clients are another option that we're looking at and putting it into different places. Yes, you hit. Yep. The question is, what are we using for remote access? We don't have anything in place now. That's on our agenda for this year, is to put something in place. Yep. Yep. And yes, the question is about providing solutions so students do carry their laptops around. That's something that we're looking at across the campus. Our different partners between the staff and the libraries and some of the other colleges, is that's a place where those solutions would come into play. I know one of our library partners, we had a meeting just last week talking about storage building storage places in the library for them. We're all of our rooms, we're looking at putting in raised floors so that you can run the network cables and the power to any part of the floor so that you can plug them in. So we're looking at that and trying to encourage different practices for the students. What we're hoping is as the laptops get smaller and lighter that it won't seem to be as much of a burden for the students. The other thing is also support for mobile devices as well. As students have an iPhone or a BlackBerry or a cell phone, is saying, can they access some of these resources, course websites, things like that, on the mobile devices, because that's also another need. So even though that's not strictly a lab activity, that goes to our other units, our course technologies units, and some of our faculty project units that are also looking at how we're developing things for portable devices as well. So it really cuts across the whole spectrum and not just the lab equipment alone. Okay. Questions? Yes, in the back there. Yeah, her question is, what are the kind of classes and software that we're trying to give remote access to? Many of them are products like MATLAB, statistical packages, things like the Adobe Suite. I'm not sure how practical that will be. That those are things that are expensive for students to buy. GIS software, CAD software. Those are some of the examples, one I can think off the top of my head, because they tend to be expensive for students. Even the educational discounts don't give the students what they need to do. There's also some file sharing requirements as well for that. So that's our short-term gain. Microsoft Office is less of an issue because Cornell does have some site licensing, so it's on most students' computers already, so that's sort of a non-issue for that. Okay. Other questions we can get for that? Mayor? Yes? The question is about to provide single user space and collaborative space within the same physical room?
Yeah.
Okay. That's not our intent because you have the sound level that has to happen. So we've identified some labs as optimum for collaboration spaces because collaboration gets noisy. People talk to each other. And then some other labs that are more quiet spaces. So we're trying to separate those activities out because many of the spaces aren't big enough to have the sound barriers that you need so that people don't get disturbed when they're trying to write that paper versus the other people that are writing together in the other side of the room. So at this point, we're looking at trying to segregate the spaces in how people are currently using the spaces within the culture of the current spaces that we have. Okay. Did I get everybody's questions in the room? So yes, go ahead. What's the function of our lab monitor, our staff? Part of it is during the daytime to assist faculty when they're teaching in the lab. Any software setup, projector setup, they're there to assist the faculty. And then also there's a training component. We do train our student staff, and we have half-time professional staff that staff the labs in the morning with how-to and a lot of the software. Our support for Blackboard, which is our course management system at Cornell, they are trained in that so they can answer basic questions. So they're there for a lot of different reasons, as well as security and the more mundane putting paper in the printers type of activity as well. Yes. His question is about what process did we use to sift through the data that we had in finalizing the reporting documents. Actually, the process that we use is I trusted the two research people that we have on our staff because they're well-versed in that, and they ended up coming up with the final reports and the recommendations. The way that we really sifted through is not so much how the reports were crafted, but what action we're going to take. In the future recommendations, as I said, there was a dozen different recommendations that came up. And what we looked at is what was feasible, given our resources, both staffing and money and everything else, and what would give us the most value for the change in activity. And that's really the thought process that we've gone through, because if you're looking at making a change that is very resource intensive, we wanted to make sure that it was worth it. Because I didn't want to expend a lot of resources on something that was not quite sure if this is really going to work. That's why our sandbox approach to trying things out in one lab gave us an early set of data of, is this really going to work in our environment? So that's really what it is. So we have a lot of other kind of wish list things that came up. For example, one wish list was students can look on a website and say, where are their free computers on campus? During finals, the labs get very busy. And students don't want to have to walk around wandering. So their wish list was, I want to go to a website and go, oh, in Stimson, I can go there, I can print my paper, or I can go here. Faculty and lab staff also wanted that. Then the staff that supported wanted to look at sharing licenses, sharing resources, sharing expertise. So there's those kind of workflow things. Those are a little bit harder because, as I said, Cornell's a big place. It's very, very distributed. And building those collaborations are what takes time for that. And that's really our goal for the long term that we have just started, is building those collaborations, because we don't want to be duplicating a lot of the resources that are already available on campus. Did I answer your question? Okay. Yes. Yes.
Did you bring their laptops into the labs? Did you prefer wireless environment or wired? And the second question is, do you have a ratio of the students to the computers in the lab?
In answer to your first question about whether the students preferred wired or wireless, that really depends on the location. In the labs where they're able to plug them into the network, they tend to do that. One of the things, as you can tell from some of the pictures, Cornell is an older school. Many of our buildings are 100 to 150 years old, and wireless, putting them inside the building, is a big challenge for our network people. So the wireless coverage is interesting on campus, shall we say. The students would prefer wireless everywhere. There's a long-term plan in beefing up the wireless as much as possible, but our goal in the labs are to give them a wired experience, because the high need for audio or video in some of our classes does not work well in wireless. So that's one of our goals. The second question, I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
Do you have a ratio of student to the number of computers that you have in your labs? Is it 500 students?
Gotcha. He asked if we had a ratio of the number of computers that we support versus the number of students. The quick statistic I can give you is, in our labs, we have, 400 to 500 computers? And there's 15,000 undergraduate students on campus. However, that's not giving you the full picture, because in the libraries have computer labs, and several of the colleges also support computer labs. So that number is not particularly accurate. I can think of just in... I'm looking at Michael. Man Library, how many labs do you have? Computers you have?
Including yours.
Yeah, so the libraries add like another 300 computers on campus, and then I know the different labs that are proprietary and some of the local colleges have more. So there's probably closer to 1,000, 1,500 computers available on campus. Okay. Well, I thank you for joining us this afternoon, and I hope that you found something valuable.
This EDUCAUSE 2008 Annual Conference podcast is sponsored by Real Networks. Outsourced hosting of multi-format digital media content is available from Real's own CDN, the Real Broadcast Network. Information at rbn.com.